welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
And welcome, everybody, to the Political Cesspool. This is Bill Rowland standing in tonight for James Edwards, who is meeting tonight and speaking to a Republican club in parts that will not be revealed for obvious reasons. But James is on the road tonight, and so I'm standing in for me. But as always, with me is the erudite and always eloquent Mr. Keith Alexander. Keith, welcome to the show as always, and I know you've got something for us. Let's hear what it's about.
Let's just jump right into the cesspool. How about that? Good to have you here, Bill, by the way, and it's always a special treat when we've got you here at the control board. We love to have you as a guest, and of course, you always bring something special and extra to the table. The first thing that we'd like to cover today, it's kind of a behind enemy lines situation that we had to go beyond the normal local newspaper to get. We went all the way to the UK, to the United Kingdom, to one of their tabloids called the Daily Mail. They ran an article last week, "White Flight from U.S. Cities as Minorities Now Dominate 8 of the Country's Biggest Metro Areas." This is the chickens coming home to roost, ladies and gentlemen. This is exactly this. You're now seeing manifestations of what all the UN census demographers and others have been predicting was going to happen to America by the year 2042. That's when whites are supposed to become a minority in the United States of America and non-whites become a majority. Well, we're beginning to see the first outcroppings of this now. Apparently, ethnic minorities now form a majority in 8 of America's biggest metropolitan areas, according to new statistics. Washington, D.C. joins New York, San Diego, Las Vegas, and, Memphis in showing a white flight from some of the country's most populated zones. The results highlighted a much wider national trend as it emerged. Non-Hispanic whites are now a minority in 22 of the country's 100 biggest urban centers. Speaking to the Washington Post, demographer with the Brookings Institution William Frey said, "What's happening is pivotal. Large metropolitan areas will be the laboratories for change. The measures they take to help minorities assimilate and become part of the labor force will be studied by other parts of the country that are whiter and haven't been touched as much by the change. One of the reasons suggested for the shift was the aging of the white population coupled with the relative youth of Hispanic and Asian populations." Something is missing here. We'll get back to that. Demographers have been shocked by the rapid changes seen in Washington, D.C., particularly in the area's schools. The report by the Northern Virginia Regional Commission noticed that student numbers have grown by almost 119,000 from 1995 to 2010. The number of those students who were white rose by a little over 1,000. The news comes as the wealth gaps between whites and minorities grew to their widest levels in a quarter century. The recession and uneven recovery have erased decades of minority gains, leaving whites on average with 20 times the net worth of blacks and 18 times that of Hispanics, according to new census data released in July. The analysis shows that racial and ethnic impact of the economic meltdown, which ravaged housing values and sent unemployment soaring. More on that later also. The median wealth of white U.S. households in 2009 was $113,149, compared with $6,325 for Hispanics and $5,677 for blacks. That's dollars, by the way. According to the analysis released Tuesday by the Pew Research Center, those ratios, roughly 20 to 1 for blacks and 18 to 1 for Hispanics, far exceed the low mark of 7 to 1 for both groups in 1995, when the nation's economic expansion lifted many low-income groups to middle-class status, the Associated Press reports. Well, Bill, what do you make of all this?
Well, Keith, this is once again the sort of, you know, the insular mentality of liberal journalism in particular. Now, I noticed that there was one comment in this article that you read that stands out to me, and that is that one of these commentators said, "Oh, yes, large metropolitan areas will be the laboratories for change."
Well, not laboratories,
but you know, Keith, you and I have been living in this Frankenstein laboratory, as you called it, for a very long time, and we have seen this change taking place, and so we can say that the results from the lab test are negative. Have come back negative. The rabbit died, and there is nothing that is positive about urban centers going into minority hands. And of course, the most striking and tragic example of that, of course, is Washington, D.C. Detroit, excuse me, I meant to say Detroit, but also Washington, D.C. also. But Detroit, of course, is virtually a third world city where all of the public facilities and public works are going into the can. And this is the result of a minority takeover of a major metropolitan area.
Yeah, you know, the first major American city to have a black mayor was Camden, New Jersey in 1969, and I remember watching it on the television, and the newly elected black mayor of Camden, New Jersey said something that was prophetic, Bill. He said, "I don't know where America's going, but Camden's going to get there first." And truer words were never spoken. Camden, New Jersey last year shut down its last public library. They don't have city services. They no longer have a city symphony. They don't have a city opera. They don't have a city anything. Because when white people leave an area, which they inevitably do when blacks take over the government, prosperity is never far behind them, Bill.
Well, that's exactly it. And, of course, I noticed in that article, too, the usual plea for wealth redistribution has come up. And I mean, it's couched in the terms of, well, the blacks and minorities are poorer now than they were 20 years ago. Well, why is that our fault? I mean, affirmative action, the various quotas in businesses, the millions and billions and billions of dollars that have been poured into, the entitlement programs. Where's all that money gone?
Well, if you've been watching our blog roll lately, you know exactly what has happened. White racists have once again gained the upper hand. The Ku Klux Klan apparently is bigger, stronger, and more powerful and influential than ever. If you don't believe it, you just need to go to that new movie that's come out, the summer's premier chick flick, The Help. If you will notice, the left never wants the civil rights movement to fade into oblivion. They are going to continue to make it front and center, because when we have a civil rights movement, or we need a civil rights movement, that's because racism is bigger and better than ever. And as a result, if it's not bigger and better than ever, how do you explain the fact that black people just can't seem to get off the mat in America?
All right, Keith. Well, we got a break coming up, everybody. We'll be back right after these commercial messages with the Political Cesspool, starring tonight Bill Rowland and Keith Alexander. And James Edwards will be back next week. But we'll hear back from you, or talk back to you, in just a minute.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
And we're back, everybody. This is Bill Rowland sitting in for James Edwards tonight. And, of course, we've got the ever-popular Keith Alexander here in the studio at AM 1380 here in Memphis, Tennessee, by the way, to give up our... On beautiful Bill Street. Exactly, Keith, on beautiful Bill Street. And there's a lot of activity out there tonight, we assure you. Friday night, Saturday night, Bill Street is not calm and quiet.
We invented flash mobs here in Memphis, we believe. In fact, we had flash mobs before there was even such a thing as a cell phone.
And we're going to be discussing flash mobs here in a little while, if not in this hour, then in the second hour, and something that people should notice about flash mobs and where flash mobs are not taking place. And where they are taking place. But we were discussing, of course, the glory and the great news that American cities are becoming darker, more Hispanic, more black, and what a great laboratory for change. And I don't think, Keith, that that kind of change is something that is beneficial to the whites, who they already say are fleeing. Well, what are they fleeing from? Diversity? The enrichment of diversity? I don't think so.
Well, they're not only bad for whites. That's why whites are fleeing, but they're bad for everyone else, including minorities. What happens is, unfortunately, there seems to be a parasite host relationship between non-whites and whites. It's, you know, kill the dog and all the fleas will die. Well, that's what's happened in Memphis. For example, in Memphis, as white people have left the city, basically the only people that live in the city of Memphis are people either too poor to have any options of moving out, or people so rich that they can insulate themselves in the equivalent of gated communities, or else in special distinct neighborhoods that have private guard services, and they send their kids to exclusive and usually rather expensive private schools. That's the few white people that are left. Most white people that depend on public schools and public education for their children have moved out in search of the so-called public, translation free, school for their children, and they keep going, as Sam Dixon says, from one interstate exit to the next, further and further on, and black people follow them like a swarm of locusts, because they know that if they want to live in first world circumstances, they're going to have to live in the vicinity of a large number of white people. Now, what happens to the black people and the white people that are left behind in a city like Memphis, Detroit, Washington, D.C., all these other wonderful places, Camden, New Jersey, where they're experiencing the joys of diversity? Well, what happens to the city government run by blacks is that they are desperately seeking white people so they can leech off of their wealth and provide all the wonderful variety of city services and government jobs that they prefer. They can't do it on the tax revenues that are generated by a black city. You see what happens to Detroit and Camden when they no longer have the option of annexing whites into their city. So what we're having in Memphis right now, for example, is an attempt by the Memphis school system, which is three times larger than what remains of the Shelby County system. Shelby County is the county that Memphis is located in. Shelby County school system is predominantly white, although it's pretty well mixed, Bill. It's, I think, 35% minority. But they're one of the top five school systems in the state of Tennessee in terms of academic achievement. On the other hand, Memphis, which is three times larger, is almost all black, 85% black, and whites are below 10%, and the other is the proverbial other. You know, you get everything from Hispanics and Pacific Islanders in there and American Indians, but in that school system, they're one of the bottom five in the bottom two in the entire state of Tennessee in terms of academic achievement. Of course, they outnumber the people in the county, so consequently, they'll have more representation on the school board. So what has happened is the city of Memphis has surrendered its school board charter, which means that the county, under Tennessee law, is the default provider for public education. So everything will now be merged into the Shelby County schools. But when all the dust settles, the more things change, the more they stay the same. The same old people that ran the city of Memphis school board and system into the ground will be in charge of the new, improved Shelby County system. And, of course, that there's a last-ditch effort being made by some of the other municipalities in Shelby County, like Bartlett, James's home, Arlington, Collierville, Germantown, Millington, to create their own municipal school systems at a greater price to themselves. But, of course, the proponents of the Memphis school system, white liberals and blacks, have vowed their undying opposition to this, and they're going to meet them in court if they do that. So what's going to happen? I predict that what's going to happen is that white people will continue their exodus from Shelby County. This will just accelerate it. And the next thing you know, Memphis will be the next Detroit.
Well, Keith, I'm going to disagree with you on one point. I don't think that whites are going to continue to flee because of the housing market right now and the economy makes it almost impossible to sell a house at its actual value. And so moving out of the area you're in is becoming less and less an option for people of who have just an ordinary income, who can't afford to just pay their house off and dump it. In fact, I know someone here in the Bartlett area who's been trying to sell the same house for over 3 years now at a very reasonable price for the size of the house and can't do it. So I think that this is a time when the school system does begin to flip over, that whites are going to stand their ground. And I would hope that these new city schools will be allowed to go forward and that Bartlett, in fact, can have their own schools to prevent what's going to happen to the rest of Shelby County.
Well, something's going to happen, and it's not going to be good. It's going to be more burdensome for white people. You can bet your bottom dollar on that. Now, what I think may well happen is what's happening in the housing market now. People can't sell their homes, so they're taking to renting them. And, of course, they can pick up another house in another area cheaper than they normally could because of the bad housing market, which, of course, leads us back to the question, why is the economy and the real estate market in the tank? And, of course, it's the tender ministrations of liberals again, and in particular, the Community Reinvestment Act passed under the Carter administration and implemented fully under the Clinton administration, in which banks and mortgage companies were forced by the federal government to make loans to blacks, Hispanics, and other minority group members at preferential rates, even when the people did not qualify for credit. Now, those are the mortgages that were bundled into these Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae mortgagized securities that we've heard about, which led to the financial meltdown that almost took down the entire global economy the last time. And here we see the Obama administration and the Congressional Black Caucus pressuring the federal government and Congress into reinstituting these same programs, and in particular they're pressing the banks to do it. In fact, Maxine Waters, you know, that sage example of restraint and sobriety in the U.S. Congress, had said that if these gangsters running the banks don't come around shortly and start making these loans, we're going to tax them out of existence, Bill.
All right, Keith. Well, we're coming up on a break here in the next few seconds. Just wanted to mention that in the third hour, Sam Dixon, one of our favorite guests, will be joining us in the third hour. And in the second hour, we'll be taking callers. Coming up, Sarah Palin has a new idea for America, America Awakening. And Keith and I may get to discussing that. If not, it'll be carried over to the second hour. And also more discussion about liberals and their insane ideas about how to run society. So we'll be back right after this break.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We've gotta get
out of this place. And we're back on the air, everybody, after that short but very profitable break during the broadcast. And we thank all of our sponsors, of course. And I want to remind you to make a donation to the Political Cesspool, because we are a listener-supported radio show. Go to the Political Cesspool website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, and make a donation. You keep us going, and we're expanding, growing all the time, reaching new audiences, reaching new people, and getting the message out. Well, Keith, we're back, and I know you are anxious to get on with the topics that we were discussing, race, demography, and municipalities around the country turning darker, speaking less English, and going back to the third world.
Yep, that's unfortunately what happens. James has said famously before that you can't have a first world nation with a third world population. And America, unfortunately, according to this Daily News article, is about to experience what happens to a first world nation when it increasingly has a third world population. Now, this is happening in America. It's happening in Europe, kind of in a different matrix, a different type of procedure over there. They're getting Hispanics and they're getting other people in. But quite frankly, every other racial group in the world is not only allowed but expected and encouraged to have a sense of racial solidarity, except for white Gentiles. Now, black people certainly have it. In fact, you know, in his most recent book, Jared Taylor wrote a great chapter about black racial consciousness and how wonderful that is. I mean, not how wonderful it is, but how strong that is. Then Hispanic racial consciousness, which was an eye-opener to me. Then Asian racial consciousness. Of course, Jared, and this is, you know, his well-documented shortcoming, the silence is deafening about Jewish racial consciousness, which unfortunately is one racial consciousness that makes everything else go. Quite frankly, if it were not for Jewish power and influence, none of the radical egalitarian movements that trouble America and are bringing America down to this day, from the civil rights movement to the sexual revolution to the drug culture to the criminal rights movement to the feminist movement to homosexual rights to radical environmentalism, you know, keep going. All of this stuff, none of it would have gained any traction without Jewish power and influence. Now, the reason we don't do anything about all of these issues, the reason conservatives are so feckless, is basically because we still worship at the shrine of the civil rights movement. That gives the left their necessary beachhead. It gives the left their safe harbor. And that's why we continue to see movies like The Help, Driving Miss Daisy, and all of these things brought up. It's almost predictable. Every movie season, there will be at least one Holocaust movie and one civil rights era movie depicting the benighted South before the triumph of liberalism. Now, where does it all lead? It leads into what the Daily Mail reports on. Basically, white people are like an endangered species, Bill. When you start messing with our nesting area, then we stop reproducing. We're kind of like the ivory-billed woodpecker was over in Arkansas back in the last century. Well, the way that they have messed or meddled with our nesting area was the first great triumph of liberalism, at least in the latter part of the 20th century, and that was school integration via Brown versus Board of Education. When white people no longer had access to high-quality, good public school education, the first reaction was to go to private schools, and people realized, hey, private schools cost money. So consequently, they limited the size of their families to the number of children that they could afford to send to private school. And the result of that is that this is, while it's the worst of times for whites, it's the best of times for blacks, Hispanics, and other minorities. They are now the beneficiaries of affirmative action. They get preference to go to select colleges and universities, professional schools. They get preference for government jobs. They get preference for private sector jobs. You know, you were talking about, we're a listener-supported radio program. Well, the Martin Luther King Memorial Fund that put up his statue in the National Mall was getting anywhere from $1 to $10 million from all these national corporations like FedEx, General Motors, you name it, General Electric. We don't get that. And we don't feel alone because we're just like white people generally. We don't get any benefits from corporate America. We get no benefits from the government. In fact, corporate America and the American government are our enemies. They have basically co-opted every private charity liberals have that used to provide money, for example, for white kids to go to college. And they have commandeered and hijacked those for the exclusive benefit of blacks. That's what's happened here in Memphis. This is another consequence that you have to look forward to with the increasing darkening of America that the Daily Mail and England is reporting on. Now, this is what will happen to America. We're going to become more like Camden, New Jersey, and Detroit, and places that have never had a race problem. If you lived in Provo, Utah, or if you lived in Dubuque, Iowa, or Grand Platte, Nebraska, or something like that, basically, if you wanted to see a black person, you had to turn on the television set. Now, take careful a focus on what's happening in places like Memphis, because that will be coming to your community next, because black people and Hispanic people who want to live in a first world environment will always be instinctively looking for the next white area in which to move so they can get the benefit of a high tax base to support government employment, which, you know, blacks are disproportionately represented in, to support an elaborate social safety net and welfare program. This is what they want. When they run out of white people, as they did in Camden, New Jersey, Gary, Indiana, Detroit, Michigan, East St. Louis, Illinois, everything disappears. They don't have the money to pay the police force. They don't have the money to hold open a public library. Everything goes down. So consequently, they're in a feverish search to latch on to an ever-shrinking group of white people, Bill.
Well, of course, these cities like Detroit eventually extend their suckers to the state, and the state begins to have to subsidize the programs the city can no longer support. And, of course, there's a great deal of resentment in most of these states against these bottomless pits of despair that simply absorb all the cash from the state. That was true of Atlanta. But I want to mention, Keith, we talked about this before the show, that look on the other side where a city goes from being a majority black city to returning to being a majority white city. And I speak most emphatically here about the chocolate city south of us in Louisiana, the great city of New Orleans, which suddenly now has a white mayor and is returning to its white roots. And the silence about New Orleans has been deafening, hasn't it? About no more the crime and all the problems seem to have dropped out of sight in terms of media attention.
Yeah, isn't that odd that we don't hear anything about that type of demographic change? I guess it's very rare, but then when something is rare, you know, what we have always heard throughout my lifetime is that news is man bites dog, not dog bites man. Well, a city becoming whiter rather than less white would definitely qualify as a man bites dog story, but you don't hear a thing about that. And as a result, nobody knows that New Orleans is in fine shape now. And that's why it's in fine shape. They basically cleared out a lot of their slums. They had a big urban renewal project. They haven't rebuilt them, thank goodness. And as a result, New Orleans is thriving like it hasn't in the past 100 years.
And let's also mention that, coincidentally, the cities that took in the refugees from Katrina have had increases in their crime rates and increase in their public subsidy for welfare and so forth. That is, they simply and a general decline in the standard of living for white people there. Now, of course, they were spread out over several cities, all these Katrina people. What they found is, oh, look, the services are just as generous or more generous here than they are in New Orleans. Why should we go back to New Orleans and have to rebuild? Why we can just start over here with our mouths and bellies full and our rent paid and our utilities paid. Why in the world should we go back to New Orleans? Well, that's the point, that these cities that New Orleans now being again run by a white mayor and returning to being a majority white city is and has responsible management is once again going to be the great, the thriving and prospering, and without the slums and without the underclass and crime and disruption and chaos that existed both pre-Katrina and post-Katrina. And so the chocolate city is now a vanilla city, and it tastes great. So, you know, it's okay to visit New Orleans now, at least for the time being. We don't know what'll happen. But we've got another break coming up, and we'll be right back with Keith Alexander.
Welcome back to to get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Glad to be back with y'all. We're here in Memphis, Tennessee, overlooking beautiful Beale Street, AM 1380, the political cesspool. I'm Bill Rowland. Obviously, I'm not the handsome and glamorous James Edwards, but I'm doing the best I can in the shabby clothes I have. So we're going to dance this through and try to give you a good show. I'm here with Keith Alexander, and Keith is grasping for the microphone because he has got great things to say. Keith, getting back to it, demographic change, majority black cities, the percentages, and how they work.
Well, you know, what I was thinking and trying to say while you were having to wind down to the last break is that Hurricane Katrina, a naturally occurring calamity, basically caused black people to do what black people in America have a natural instinctive yen to do anyway, which is to relocate themselves in areas of a more predominant white population. You know, let's face it. Have you ever heard of black people getting prosperous and moving to a blacker area? They always tend to move to a whiter area because they instinctively want to experience the good life. They want la dolce vita, and that is the prosperity that comes from living in a more white area. Well, Hurricane Katrina allowed a lot of black people who were concentrated and focused in a virtually all black area like New Orleans to be moved to less black areas, more white areas like Houston, like Memphis, like Jackson, Mississippi, like places throughout the South and the North. And as a result, a lot of those people said, hey, you know, the living's pretty good up here. I think I'll stay here. And that's what they like. See, the thing is, black people have the desire to have political power, and that is like the snake in the Garden of Eden. This is what causes all the problems. If black people, who are 12.8% of the U.S. population, were evenly spread throughout the nation, first of all, we wouldn't have pockets of liberalism like we have in the Pacific Northwest or in Minnesota or in New England, where people have all of these strange, antithetical to reality ideas about what black people are like, and two, there would be more prosperity. The problem is, when black people are located anywhere, they start grasping for political power because they want government jobs, and to get government jobs, they feel like they need to be in charge of the government as much as possible, and they are assisted in getting disproportionate representation in the government by all these triumphs of the legislature and the courts in the civil rights movement, like the Voting Rights Act of 65 and the Civil Rights Act of 1964. They carve out districts so they can get representation. They're always pressuring the cities, the states, the localities into giving them ever more power. And when they actually do get power, unfortunately, then everything goes down the tubes, as it has in a place like Detroit, Michigan, or Camden, New Jersey. Now, this increasing black political representation is one of the primary drivers of white flight. This is why white people get out, because they don't care to be ruled by people that are dumb and lazy and avaricious, who look at them as a herd of sheep to be sheared for their taxes and their money. So consequently, they move out, and all of these, you know, problems associated with the darkening of America and the darkening of any particular area in America then accelerate. It's like the vortex in the toilet bowl. You know, the further down you go, the quicker it spins. So, you know, you were talking about states having to take over cities like Camden, New Jersey, or Detroit, Michigan. Well, what happens when a state becomes majority-minority? Well, like California. What was Arnold Schwarzenegger trying to engineer right before he got out of office? He wanted the federal government to step in and bail out the majority-minority state of California because they had so many non-white people that were taking a disproportionate amount of public goods and services, like education, like health care, like things like that, that the city, that the state of California could no longer bear it, and they were having white flight not from a city, but from an entire state bill.
Well, Keith, of course, as you said earlier, when we, in one of our discussions, what area or what municipality or what school was ever improved by integration? When did the scores go up after a school was integrated or a neighborhood become safer and with a higher standard of living and property values increase when that neighborhood becomes integrated? Well, there's no such example anywhere in the United States or the world. Whenever there is a minority or black takeover of a neighborhood, the corresponding values drop on all levels, and there is no improvement. So, I mean, that is the standard of living of Africans. They have a standard of living that is not a first world standard of living because they do not have a first world population. So naturally, they import their standard of living to wherever they go, and this is to the detriment of the white population, who lose neighborhoods that cannot be recovered.
And what they gain is a lot of welfare dependency, a lot of people that take more out in services than they contribute in taxes. And as a result, white people don't like being imposed upon like that. Nobody does. So they start to move. Basically, everything is a paradigm or a microcosm of white flight. For example, what happens in a neighborhood? If you've seen a neighborhood transition from white to black, then you have an idea of what happens on a larger scale when a city or a county transitions from white to black. And if you've seen that happen in a city, if you have that experience, that unfortunate experience, then you know what is going to happen when a state like California transitions from white to non-white. And unfortunately, according to UN demographers, we are about to find out in the year 2042 what happens to a nation, the United States of America, when a nation transitions from majority white to majority non-white.
Well, Keith, I want to make this comment about this article in the UK Mail. We started the this hour with this article about white flight in U.S. cities and how large metropolitan areas will be the laboratories for change. Well, as we said earlier, those laboratories have already come back with results and they're negative. And actually, what this laboratory is a laboratory of alchemy, trying to turn lead into gold. And of course, you know, like the alchemists of the Middle Ages, they will produce all kinds of tricks and gimmicks to prove that this glorious change from lead to gold is taking place, but of course it'll be fool's gold.
Well, you know, that change that you're talking about is what they call the philosopher's stone. They alchemists in the Middle Ages were always trying to find the secret formula that could turn lead into gold. They never found it. Likewise, liberals will never find the philosopher's stone of race relations, in which they can turn a majority-minority population into a plus rather than a minus for any locality where this happens. So consequently, any people that really have the best interests of their community at heart will be alarmed when they see the locality transitioning from majority white to majority black. And black people and Hispanic people ought to be the most worried of all. Hispanic people, for example, have been trying to get out of Mexico to come to America because they want to live in a more prosperous situation. Well, when they move, they bring Mexico with them, just like when black people move from Africa or Haiti, they bring Africa or Haiti to wherever they go.
And of course, that's an irreducible equation because, as I said, you know, in Africa, and the prime example in Africa is the takeover of Zimbabwe by blacks from a small minority of whites, and the prosperity disappearing in the former Rhodesia. And now in South Africa, the same transition taking place, as we discussed with our guest Elena Mercer several weeks ago. So this is not only true of the United States, but of prosperous states. It's a worldwide phenomenon and is not going to be improved by liberal platitudes.
Yeah, unless we can find another planet with human life on it, we have no other place to look except on the globe, planet Earth. And everywhere in planet Earth where this change has happened, it's been a change for the worse. Now, the only time, for example, sub-Saharan Africa, let's focus on that for a moment. Sub-Saharan Africa is the most prosperous in terms of natural resources of any continent in the world. Charles Darwin wrote a famous quotation about this that people often quote. He said that they have more mineral wealth, they have gold, they have diamonds, they have oil, they have everything. They have the most fertile soil in sub-Saharan Africa. They have the longest growing season, but the only time sub-Saharan Africa has been prosperous is when it was ruled by white people, specifically Rhodesia, which was called the breadbasket of Africa under white rule, and South Africa. Now that blacks have taken over both of those countries, Rhodesia, the former Rhodesia, the breadbasket of Africa, is now Zimbabwe, the basket case of Africa. And South Africa is in the same situation. You don't hear much about it in the American media because the American media has been taken over by leftists, just like every other principal institution that sets cultural and moral standards in America, like the entertainment industry, like the news media, like higher academia. The left is in charge, and the left doesn't report news that it doesn't want you to hear. That doesn't exist. But the truth exists, just like the Ghost of Christmas Past said on The Christmas Carol, the Charles Dickens short story that we see every Christmas time. Remember that the Ghost of Christmas Past said, truth lives, and truth does live.
Okay, well, we've rounded up the first hour. We'll be back at the top of the next hour right after this news break.